Your TV is a spy and encryption is broken. We'll talk to Ian Thompson from The Register about whether or not the sky is falling. Plus, a smart home expert tells us whether we still want a smart home. And Pinterest has a way for you to buy more things that you see. And you can buy them cheaper. All that and a whole lot more coming up on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1719, recorded Tuesday, March 7th, 2017.
This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now. Enter promo code TNT to receive a free Tracker Bravo with any purchase.
And by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT.
Welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we tell you every single thing you need to know about technology that happened today. We're going to just start reading WikiLeaks from the beginning, go through the whole thing.
This is going to be a long episode.
Yeah, I hope you got time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm Megan Maroney.
I'm Jason Howell. Joining us to help read through every single page of the new WikiLeaks leaks is Ian Thompson from The Register. How's it going, Ian?
Oh, tired but good. Tired but good.
I was waiting for you to say, oh, I'm very, very good, and then have to pull you down to reality, which is the fact that you've been poring over all of this stuff for quite a long time today. For those who have not heard about this yet, give a quick summary here. WikiLeaks unleashed an unprecedented collection of CIA hacking tools and code with the codename Vault 7 to the tune of 8,761 documents and files, hundreds of millions of lines of code. And, of course, Ian, you've been poring over the details for the past 6 hours. You probably haven't even scratched the surface. WikiLeaks claims that this is the biggest dump of its kind. Is that true?
It's certainly one of the biggest. I would say in terms of sheer volume, the State Department cables probably trumps this one. But in terms of importance, this is probably the most important dump they've done so far. And they're saying this is just the start, so there may be more to come later. But we're talking about a vast quantity of documents. As I say, I've been going through this for the last 6 hours. I don't even feel like I've scratched the surface. When you look at all the PDFs and the studies that are in there, there's so much more to go through, but I managed to at least get the basics of it down and the basics of what's been done. And there is a phenomenal amount of stuff in there which is going to cause both the CIA and the FBI a certain amount of embarrassment. And we Brits, of course, are going to be slightly red-faced as well, because they do show quite how closely the CIA has been working with British intelligence agencies and others to actually collect things like critical exploits, serious attack code, and various ways of invading their way into the devices that we use and love every day.
The things we've heard are probably happening, and then you read something like this, you hear about all the details in this, and you understand how it's probably actually happening. one thing I thought was really interesting is when you go down to the bottom of the WikiLeaks explainer, where they kind of like illustrated some of the basic things that, you know, that is spelled out here, which we'll talk about in a second. Down at the very bottom, they basically say how they're encouraging journalists to really dig through it and find out other stories, because they're like, we've only scratched the surface. We pulled out a few of the things that we thought were interesting. We're waiting on the best journalistic coverage to basically find all the hidden stuff, and then we will grant early access to more information based on that merit, the merit of journalistic coverage from that.
Yeah, right. I'm slightly skeptical about that. I should imagine is going to play favorites with this, right, on organizations that don't point out that they've been sort of less than helpful in some regards. But I mean, certainly they're right. There's a lot of stuff here. There's also a lot of misinformation which has come out early on. There was a number of excitable headlines from the New York Times and others saying that Signal, the encryption program developed by Whisper and that's used in WhatsApp and various other applications, have been compromised. It hasn't. But on the other hand, just to give you sort of the TLDR rundown on this, If you're using Windows, you're screwed. If you're using macOS, you're almost certainly screwed. If you're using iOS or Android, you're definitely screwed. Your smart TV, it can easily be turned into something which listens into your house. They've got an entire working group on Internet of Things devices, so that Amazon Echo is not looking quite so good now, is it? And there's a whole bunch of stuff as to how they can sort of subvert various pieces of software to suit a surveillance aim, within going into some quite interesting detail. And plus, there's all kinds of sort of little asides. There's one analyst has his homepage where he lists the music he likes and the kind of Japanese ASCII characters he uses to converse with online. The dump even includes encryption keys for a couple of bits of software, one of which, text editor, the encryption key owner is listed as a computer repair shop about an hour away from CIA headquarters. Now, I called up that computer repair shop today, and the guy was really rather peeved at why his phone would be going off the hook, because he claimed he got nothing at all to do with the CIA and had no idea how those keys came to be published. So there is a whole mess of porridge to be gone through on this, just to work out exactly what is going on and what's being said. And frustratingly, there's also a lot of information which has been redacted, which is presumably either WikiLeaks has decided this is top secret stuff, or that they've just didn't want to put those particular files up for whatever reason. So it's a frustrating process going through it, but I would encourage all the listeners and watchers to get into the archive, do some digging around, and particularly if you work for a software company or if you work for a developer or if you're a developer, get in there, because there are lots and lots of useful tips about how to harden up your products.
So you mentioned the smart TV, and of course that was a big part of the news. The Samsung smart TVs are spying on you, that they're able to put malware in it that makes it look like it's turned off. It even suppresses the light so that, you know, the light is off and it's still listening to you. And this is, of course, they called this project Weeping Angel, which was one of my favorite parts of this. So can you talk a little bit about that? I mean, you said you're screwed. Do you assume that this isn't something that's just limited to the Samsung smart TV, but any TV? TV.
I mean, they talked about smart TVs. They did mention Samsung specifically. But realistically, this kind of attack should work on any smart TV product. I mean, you've got to remember, this is basically an expansion of an attack they've been using on mobile phones for ages. There was a major case about 10-ish years ago where an organized criminal figure was taken down because they installed malware on his phone, which made it appear that it was off when it was in fact acting an audio bug. And this is exactly the same thing they've done with the smart TVs. It has a function called fake off, where as you say, they shut out the LEDs and it can still do audio recording. And in the notes, they say they want to expand this so that they can also do video surveillance this way and also hack into the general Wi-Fi network that the smart TV is connected to. So, you know, this is an obvious target. You've got these things in your living room. They're listening to you all the time. And they have a whole embedded devices working group, which is looking at how to expand this into self-driving cars, into IoT devices in the home. You know, it's the CIA isn't dumb. You know, they know this stuff is in people's homes. They know it's an ideal surveillance apparatus. I should imagine they're going at it with all guns blazing, trying to make sure that they can use these devices in the future.
Now, you know, another thing that is getting a lot of press, a lot of coverage, is the insecurities, the zero-day vulnerabilities inside both desktop OS systems, like you said, pretty much any operating system at this point, in your words as host. But there's been a lot of misreporting about that as well, or rather misunderstanding, where it's pointing to the fact that secure messaging services like Signal, secure messaging services that people have relied on for encrypted, protected communication and assumed that was protected, is actually vulnerable in light of what we found here. But that's not a vulnerability of those apps. That's a vulnerability of the underlying OS that those apps are running on. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Yeah. Signal, I mean, Moxie Marlin Spites Whisper developed Signal. It's one of the gold standards for secure communication. And there was a real fear that the CIA had maybe been able to subvert this. From the documents I've seen, there's no indication that's the case. What does happen is that if you're running Signal on your mobile phone, for example, and your mobile phone has been pwned by the CIA, then they can stick a text logger on there and a screenshot saver, and that's the way that they can get around the app. But the apps themselves look solid, and we don't want to get into a situation like we had earlier in the year where some excitable press reports go out saying WhatsApp security is being compromised and everyone dump it, and people dumped it and went for less secure communications, and it was a complete misunderstanding. I was at the Enigma security conference at the end of January, and there were security people there who were saying, when journalists run articles, scary articles like that, which aren't based in truth, they might quite literally have blood on their hands if somebody dumps a secure messaging service, goes to an insecure one, and then gets arrested by an authoritarian regime.
So I know these documents described guides to targeted spying, not the general, just like, let's spy on everyone, right? So, I mean, is the sky falling? Like, do we all need to be worried? I don't want to get into the, like, I'm not doing anything wrong, so I'm fine situation. Does the average person have something to worry about? And if so, what is it?
Well, I'm not a big believer in the if you've done nothing wrong, you've got nothing to hide argument, because otherwise, why would people have curtains? But in terms of this, what this has exposed is a giant hacking toolkit, if you like. This isn't stuff that would be used for mass data slurping of everyone. It's basically you could build customized software to either get a person or a group of people, or to build general tools which would then be installed on a target system. For example, the smart TVs one, you need to actually get a USB stick into the TV to load it up,
right?
At least based on the slightly outdated documents that we saw, although they did say they were trying to work around that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, this isn't something that is going to be deployed against, Joe Bloggs in Pigsmuckle, Arkansas. This is stuff for highly targeted and almost customized versions of spying. But one thing it does show is the sheer breadth of stuff they've got. And it does cast into doubt the FBI's assertions that they couldn't break into that iPhone in the San Bernardino case, and Apple would therefore have to give them a secret key to, or build a new version of the operating system that they could get into. Because if they just trotted down to Virginia and spoken to their pals at the CIA, and the documents show that the FBI and CIA do regularly exchange tools in this way, then it's almost certain they could have gotten to the iPhone just using the existing tools they got. So, I mean, while this is a highly targeted thing, it does have implications for everyone here, everyone in the U.S. and abroad.
What about the capabilities of Joe Schmo from Pig's Knuckle, Arkansas, which I love that as a place, by the way.
I don't know if it is, but
I hope it is.
I wish no offense to the citizens of Arkansas. I'm sure it's a lovely state. Never actually been myself.
Or Pig's Knuckle, which I hear is beautiful in the summertime.
Yes, I know. But when it comes to city names, city town names, then Britain really does. We punch above our weight in that area.
my question about Joe Schmo is this information that Joe can use to implement in ways of his own? I mean, to... insecurities and things.
There is code in there. I have no doubt that the hacking community is going through these files with a fine tooth comb to see what they've got. Most of the details I've seen, though, are more about ways to get, sort of describing ways to, say, for example, subvert DLL files, or to get around antivirus security by using RAR, sort of RAR memory strings and that sort of thing. It's fairly in-depth stuff. It's not something that your average script kiddie is going to be able to pick up and use. But for the hacking community is basically 90% script kiddies that buy off-the-shelf malware kits and 10% hardcore hackers that write and develop their own code. Right. Now, for that 10%, this is going to be very, very interesting reading. But you've got to remember that the companies who produce this software are also going to be reading these documents if they've got half a brain cell to rub together. And they're going to be instructing their engineers, right, read this, take this on board, let's see how we can harden things up. Because they know, even if they're not that worried about the CIA subverting their software, they're tremendously worried about the hacking community doing it. And with information like this out and the hacking community going through it, they need to be prepared for some serious attacks.
Yeah, and I have to imagine what, at least to a certain degree, what you glean from this information about, let's say, the zero-day vulnerabilities of Android and iOS, for example, is not this is the vulnerability, but rather we have a vulnerability. It's called this, and that allows us to gain access. It doesn't necessarily illustrate how anyone can gain access to that. So I wonder how the companies, you know, how Apple and Google and whatever companies that are affected by this actually find those zero-day vulnerabilities based on that information.
I know this is, I mean, it's really quite interesting going through there, because when it came to their vulnerability collections, Android had a lot more on the mobile side. Android had a lot more vulnerabilities than iOS.
Yeah.
But they also put down, Apple users can be smug, but that's kind of a default position for Apple users anyway. When you actually looked at where they got these exploits from, because in some cases that was listed, they were either developed internally at the CIA, they were bought in from the FBI or from Britain's GCHQ or from other intelligence agencies. But a surprisingly high number were bought from outside companies. So there is a thriving business, if you like, in 0 days. And the documents reflect that. But, I mean, at the end of the day, everyone knows they've got zero-day flaws in their own code. What was interesting about this, particularly on the mobile side, was that, and also, I guess, on the desktop operating system, was that, Apple does seem a lot stronger than the competition. But no one is infallible on this.
Right.
So, there are always going to be 0 days out there, but it does look, and this pains me to say it as someone who's not an Apple fanboy, it does look like the men and women of Cupertino have done a bang-up job so far.
Yes!
And celebration from the Megan Rowley side of the table.
For the record, this is a Samsung Smart TV and I was feeling like someone was watching us, and now I understand.
It's Ian. Ian's watching us through the TV. That's how it works. No, that's not how it works. Ian Thompson from The Register, really appreciate you joining us. I'm sure there's going to be many more things that we're going to find out over the coming weeks from these documents. So we'll just have to bring you back again once we find out a little bit more to scare our pants off. So thank you.
It's always a pleasure. Always good to chat. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Thank you, Ian.
So we have a little bit more news today. It is the new space race. Who can get a rich person to pay them a kajillion dollars to launch them into the moon in an autonomous spaceship first? My money is on SpaceX CEO Elon Musk, but Amazon CEO Jeff Bezos has also revealed new photos of his human moon shuttle, the New Glenn, named after John Glenn. And while Musk has still stayed silent about who has paid him for the round trip into space and back, Bezos says today that his first customer is not a space tourist, but rather the satellite operator Eutelsat. For his part, Musk has been flying satellites for commercial companies for several years, whereas Bezos has been supporting his endeavor with his own money, more than $500 million to date. Musk says he will fly a person to the moon in 2018. That's 3 years before Bezos will launch his new orbital rocket.
Take that, Bezos! Mm-hmm. They're going to be yelling back and forth obscenities at each other for the first person that makes it. Blue Origin's new Shepard rocket, apparently, which is designed for carrying space tours to the edge of space, was launched and landed in this similar fashion a few times last year in 2016. So this isn't kind of like it isn't like Bezos and Amazon suddenly saw what SpaceX was doing and was like, oh, we should do that now. They've been working on this for a while, so it's been happening. Similarity, obviously, in the fact that they're landing them on boats. Mm. There's probably only so many ways you can land a rocket on a boat, so I'm sure there are a lot of similarities there.
If you plan to reuse a rocket, right, there's not that many places you can land it right now.
Right, and technologies around making that work, I'm sure, are very similar. But, whatever gets us to space faster, I want to become a space tourist. I doubt I'll ever have the money for it, but choose me.
Well, of course, the reusable rockets are what is going to get us there faster, because it's going to save money, and everyone's goal is to reduce the launch costs. So I say keep racing. Keep reaching for the stars.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Last month, we told you about the new visual search from Pinterest that will allow you to buy anything you see in the real world. Just snap a photo of it, and Pinterest will tell you where and how to buy it. Today, the company released a browser extension that will let you buy anything you see on the web. It doesn't even have to be on Pinterest. The feature right now is exclusive to Chrome, but Pinterest engineer Kent Brewster says the extension will come to other browsers soon. So if you see an image, let's say, of a dress on the Macy's website, you can use the browser extension to find other dresses like it on Pinterest that might not cost as much money. You can even search for single items in the back of an image. Like if there's, a picture of a living room and there's one chair in the back that you need to have, you can search for that. It's really great, I guess, for finding cheaper options. I tried it with a picture of Travis Kalanick earlier, and it just showed me a bunch of, it said Pinterest, like more like this, and it was a bunch of other white dudes with nice hair.
Were you shopping for Travis? Or?
I might have. It might have been.
That was a pretty awesome search result. Yeah, I mean, this is really cool. I feel like kind of Google's been doing, you know, had this capability for a while now. It makes a whole lot of sense for Pinterest to be doing this just from a product standpoint. Mm-hmm. So many times you're looking at Pinterest, getting ideas for things, and you have to kind of approximate on your own. If you can get the service to help you approximate how you get that thing or how you get closer to that idea, I think it's a win-win. So I really like that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, up next, our TVs can spy on us, but I still want a smarter home. Our next guest shows us how. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. Okay, you've been there. They are not under their couch. They're not in your cupboards. They're not on the table. Your meeting is in 20 minutes, and you cannot find your keys. We've been there. You know you've been there. Now with Tracker, you never have to be there again. You don't have to worry about losing things because you will find them. The Tracker Bravo is a coin-sized device constructed with anodized aluminum for the thinnest, most durable tracking. You can locate those misplaced keys, your wallets, your bags, your computers in seconds. Just pair Tracker to your smartphone, attach it to any item, and find its precise location with the tap of a button. It is that easy. If you lose your phone, you don't have to have a tracker on your phone. You can press the button on your Tracker device. It's on your keys or whatever. And then you can even ask your Amazon Alexa, and then your phone will ring even when that phone is on silent. Your phone can track up to 10 devices at once. You can also customize two-way separation alerts so that you'll be notified before you leave your item behind. There are over 4.5 million devices shipped. That means Tracker has the largest crowd GPS network in the world. So your lost item will show up on a map even if you lost it miles away from where you are right now. The Tracker app records its last known location. Then when another Tracker user comes within 100-foot range of your item, you'll get a GPS update of where your item is located. And now with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's no reason not to give it a try. So stop losing your stuff today. Go to thetracker.com and enter promo code TNT. You'll get a free Tracker Bravo with any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT, for your free Tracker Bravo with any order. So today, of course, we learned that Amazon dropped its first amendments right case after the defendant in the murder case agreed to hand over the data that was contained on his Amazon Echo. Amazon has filed a motion against the search warrant for the voice interactions with Alexa, claiming that they were considered protected speech. Now that the defendant himself is given access to the interactions, Amazon has abandoned its case for now. But as we race to make our houses smarter, the problem itself is not going away. We just spent a lot of time talking about the WikiLeaks story. Those leaked documents describe techniques developed specifically for embedded systems, which the documents dumbed down to describe as the things in the Internet of Things. Here to talk to us about the wonderfully complicated smarter home life is Joe Daganzik from the website Smarter Home Life. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thanks, Megan. It's great to be here.
Well, okay. So what is your advice that you give people who want a smarter home, but they're concerned with the amount of information these devices know and can reveal about us?
Well, just like you guys were talking about, what I advise usually is you have to give a little bit of thought to what you're bringing into your home to make it smarter. If you're just sticking with the basics of just control and you're not going with an Amazon Echo or a Google Home or any of these listening type devices, I think you don't have to worry as much. But anything, as some people would say, of course, anything that's connected to the internet is at risk on some level for someone potentially spying on you, just like you guys were literally just talking about with the CIA.
So I know you write a bunch of great pieces about how we can smarten up our homes, and you were a big proponent of smart locks, but you've recently gone back to the dumb lock. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes, and actually, I didn't completely go away from it. It was perhaps slightly misleading, but in the article, I talk about that I was moving to going to be starting to review a new smart lock. So I practiced something that I normally do when I move completely from like one home to another, which is I live without the automation. for a certain amount of time. And I was having some, as I've also said with these smart locks, if you have a door and a deadbolt that doesn't turn smoothly, kind of, you know, very, very easily, the smart lock of any type is not going to help you out there. So anyways, I went for about 6 to 8 weeks and I had taken the August smart lock off the door and just lived without the automation. Keys being required, no ability to think about, you know, did I lock the front door? Because I was just used to just closing the door behind me and just leaving because the technology had become so good. So that was actually a great way of going between devices. And now I'm actually testing and will be reviewing soon the new QuickSet Premise smart lock, which is HomeKit enabled. And that'll be out in a couple weeks. So not exactly completely abandoning smart locks, but at least for 6 to 8 weeks.
Okay, well, you'll have to tell me which one to get. That's the other thing. I am moving into a new home, and so I'm sort of selfishly had you on here because I have all kinds of questions. But maybe other people will take advantage of the answers as well. But it's so expensive. There's, you know, just in considering like Hue lights or, you know, just all the lights that we have in our house and making them all smart, that each bulb is really expensive. But you recently reviewed the Cube, which is a cheaper option. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
That's right. They just started shipping. This was a crowdfunded product. It was at CES. They just, what you have on the screen, they just also launched a campaign for their smart strip. And I have it here. I just got it in the mail a couple days ago, and I'll just slide it across. There it is. Anyways, this is the Cube smart bulb. The first, many people have emailed me, and like you said, Megan, these are expensive devices, normally going for $45 to $60 per bulb. This is the first Wi-Fi color changing, you know, it has all of the features of, say, a Philips Hue or a LifeX, but it is less than $30, running at $29 now on their website. And their smart light strip is going to be about the same price when it is supposed to ship this summer. They don't have any integrations set up yet, but those are coming soon in terms of IFTTT, the Amazon Echo, and likely, obviously, the Google Home. It's not HomeKit enabled because, of course, with HomeKit products, there's a certain amount of specific hardware that has to be put in. So probably for their Gen 1 product, they skipped that. But it works with Android and soon with iOS. And they've got an app that lets you obviously set some scenes, do some proximity, so the lights will turn on automatically, sensing your Bluetooth presence, scheduling, all the different things that you can expect. And my initial testing is good. I'll probably be putting out a quick review very, very soon on the bulb and a full review later. But it's exciting that someone has kind of taken up the gauntlet and said, we're going to make this more affordable for people.
Over the holiday... The holiday, just this last year, I finally invested in a Hue light bulb setup. So I've got the Hue Bridge, and then I've got 3 light bulbs at home. And I mean, I've completely fallen head over heels with the system. We've just had so much fun with it. But what I realized in that, and maybe this is, you know, kind of what takes smart home and brings it a little bit more mainstream, is that it's more expensive up front. Let's say a bulb is $35 to $50 or whatever, but Hue specifically, they tout that these bulbs are going to last 5-6 years long. I mean, some of that cost is kind of taken out of the equation, or at least reduced when you consider the lifespan of that and not having to replace it all the time. I imagine that'll probably apply to other smart home devices over time as everything in the category kind of drops in price, at least, you know, as more people adopt it. Do you think
it should? And in fact, I asked that question of a few of the vendors, specifically Philips Hue, most of which they didn't really want to comment. The reason for some of the products being so expensive is we're still at the very, very beginning of the market, even though some would say home automation has been around for a long time. Since, you know, several decades, but it was really a very specialty or a very nerdy kind of thing. Now anyone can walk down to their Best Buy or purchase some items on Amazon and you're ready to go. The products, like you said, over a number of year lifespan, I mean, traditional or typical LED, not smart LED bulbs, are supposed to last 20 plus years. And these smart bulbs are supposed to last at least, like you said, 7, 8, 10 plus years. So that cost is split up over time. And the other thing to think about is you're getting all of the support. You're getting all of the firmware updates. You're getting new features after these bulbs launch. So you could buy one, even say the new Cube smart bulb at $30, hold on to it for 5, 6, 7 years, and you're going to get a lifetime of product updates, new features, and cool stuff, you know, for that original price.
I have a home assistance question. Jason and I recently switched our phones. He took my iPhone and I took his Pixel phone for a month. And we were thinking that the next chapter of this is obviously that I take his Google Home and he takes my Amazon Echoes.
I just can't stop trading.
Yeah. Just like you guys did the iOS and the Android swap, which I thought was, exactly. was awesome.
So I'm assuming you've tried both. Who's going to win this one? Say me.
You know, and I'll hold both of them up. I have both of these devices. A lot of times I keep them turned off, or I keep them, you know, they've got the mute buttons for privacy. And there's been some studies on that, that they are actually muting. Well, we assume, we don't know anything anymore, I guess, as of today. You know, I think, and a lot of people have said this, and I will agree with it, Google has that treasure trove of data. They really know the world, in addition to having really great, audio recognition. My own experience is that it seems that most of the time Google Home is just better at recognizing what I want it to do. Where what's her name? I won't wake everyone's device up. Just can't quite get it together. Or she just always says, can you restate that? Can you say it some other way? I'm like, no, I need you to understand how I speak. And honestly, it's been 2+ years since the Amazon Echo originally launched, and Amazon, it's time to play, time to get this stuff right.
I agree with that.
Yep. Okay, so three of your favorite smart home gadgets. What are they?
Three gadgets, I would say categories, but then I'll be dodging the question. lighting control, obviously Philips Hue and LifeX are wonderful. It's the easiest way to get into the smart home. And both of those products, both of those product lines are just wonderful. They integrate with so many different systems. And LifeX is about to integrate also with HomeKit for their new products. For smart locks and security, I have to say, that would be in addition to, say, a smart thermostat like the Nest or an Ecobee. The August smart lock is just, it's compatible with so many things. You don't have to rekey your lock. You don't have to think about that or do so much work like taking your old lock apart and replacing it. I think it's an excellent product. I had used it for 2 years solid, and it got better over time. I've had a Nest thermostat. It's an excellent product. I also am going to be soon testing the Ecobee 3, which also has the ability for having remote sensors around your home to kind of balance your HVAC system and possibly save you some more energy. I think those are the three products, but those are, to me, the three top categories still in the smarter home, as I call it.
One of the things that I've really enjoyed since getting the Hue, and then I also have the Google Home at home and getting them to kind of speak the same language and everything, is realizing that I already have what I need to kind of build out from there. And just the fact that IoT is really componentized. So you only need like $30 here, $40 there to add this great new feature to your home. So it's almost like once you open the floodgates and you realize that fact, then it kind of becomes addictive. You kind of realize how much further you can build it out. And it really doesn't cost that much if you're spending $30 or $40 here and there to grow it. So that's one way of bringing this kind of mainstream. But then we have, as we've talked about many times in this episode, all of these kind of surveillance privacy, you know, issues that keep bubbling up around devices like this. Do you think stories like that are going to prevent smart home from becoming more mainstream? I mean, are we kind of getting to the point where people are going to be afraid to make their homes smarter?
I think number one, it's a trust issue. You know, I think some people probably have thought for the longest time that, you know, these agencies, the CIA or FBI or hackers, just they automatically have the ability to get into these devices anyways. So if all of these documents prove to be true, then maybe people are going to be afraid. I think time will tell, but it's going to be a trust thing that this is going to be on the manufacturer's side as well, trying to reassure customers after stories like this come out, because they're going to get the emails. I'm going to get the emails. Should I have these devices in my home? And maybe it won't. I would love to have a crystal ball and say yes or no in the next 6 months. But obviously, at this point, I'm going to defer that a little while.
And of course, as we talked about yesterday, Consumer Reports just came out with, they just announced that they're going to be trying to test all of their products. That's going to be part of their rating just based on privacy and security. So I have hope for us. I don't feel like we're all playing the violin on the deck of the Titanic.
I don't know how to play the violin. So
yeah, exactly. Because I do think that there's room for these devices to protect our privacy and also let us lay in bed and turn things off and on without getting up, which is everyone's dream,
yeah,
right?
Totally.
Yeah, totally. It really is. In the land that we all imagined all this stuff from, like, you know, Star Trek and sci-fi, in those movies and TV series, if you remember, anyone could be found at any time from the big, you know, computer database. And so it really, but in those worlds, somehow there was a trust that, well, if you weren't doing anything wrong, or if they were just you're just doing your job, you weren't in trouble. But as soon as you were in trouble somehow, you were instantly located. So it's a trust issue. I think that's where the smarter home is going to have to move into.
Well, Joe Duganzik, thank you so much for joining us. Joe is at smarterhomelife.com, and he's on Twitter at smarterhomelife. So smarter, but you're always smarter than your smart home, right?
That's right. That's
thank
right.
You so
well,
much.
Thank you so much, Megan and Jason.
Absolutely. Appreciate you coming on. Have
Take
a good
care.
Thanks. All right, feedback time. Phil tweeted at us about our Google Home story. Man, so many threads on the same topic here today. Phil said, just wanted to point out that Google Home begins all featured snippets by citing the source. So this is in relation to our conversation, I believe it was yesterday, about kind of fake news and Google's kind of featured snippet as they kind of pick out the best story to match a certain query. I completely forgot that Google Home does this, and when we trade, you'll see. Mm-hmm. But yes, it starts everything with according to Wikipedia, blah 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 is da 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 da, and that certainly helps. But you know, some sites are so like generically named that's not as enough of an indication when you're just hearing it versus seeing it, let's say,
or right.
being
yeah.
able to scrutinize it with your eyes.
Yeah, it's usually like, not according to some guy who lives right. in his mom's basement in Detroit.
According to random person on the internet.
Yeah, that's usually not what the website
is. Yeah, that's
is.
Not
it's
what you
true.
Get, yes. unfortunately. Yeah. Up next, Airbus gets pretty creative with our flying car future. I like what I see. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They're the sponsor of this episode. And Rocket Mortgage is perfect for anyone who's looking to go through the mortgage process, but doesn't want to get, it's a complex process. Start to finish, there's just a lot of things that you have to consider, a lot of information and data that you have to pull from a number of different places. It's not always the easiest approach. So you need, you need a mortgage lender that's going to help walk you through the process, someone that you can trust, a company that has your best interest in mind and can work you through that process. With Rocket Mortgage, you're going to get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. So you won't have to waste time searching through stacks of paperwork. With Rocket Mortgage, you can securely share your financial information to get a mortgage approval in minutes. It's super quick. You can even adjust the rate and the length of your loan in real time. That's to make sure that you get the mortgage solution that's right for you. Just play around with the numbers, see where you get. Now, whether you're looking to buy a home or refinance your existing mortgage, you can lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage. So skip the bank, skip the waiting, go completely online at quickenloans.com/TNT. That's quickenloans.com/TNT. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states and MLSconsumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support.
TNT's fan of the day is Freddy the Raccoon, who says how Baby Groot watches TNT.
Oh, I recognize that Baby Groot.
Yeah.
And I recognize Freddy the Raccoon. I think he's an employee here, I believe. He hides in the shelves, although he's not hiding behind us today.
Well, I don't know. He probably watches us through that TV.
Freddy the Raccoon is the one that's watching us through that TV. It makes me feel a little better.
Yes. Show us how you or your raccoons watch TNT. Record a video, take a picture of yourself or your setup, post it on Instagram, Google Plus, Twitter, or Facebook. Use the hashtag. Ow!
Sorry. Freddy the Raccoon apparently jumped right into your face.
Scary.
Sorry about that. He got excited.
I watch TNT, and I'm going to find it. I probably deserve that, Brian.
Well, I mean, I saw it launch, and it was a curveball. It was a curve raccoon, and it kind of went and curved right into your face. I don't think it was intentional or...
I was aiming for Jason, I swear. The raccoon has a mind of his own.
Mm-hmm. It's a flying raccoon. It's just not a very good flying raccoon.
Now he's back in the Burke
Anyways,
cam.
Now he's staring at us, and I'm slightly scared because now we know that the raccoon attacks people. Airbus is showing off a new flying... Are you okay, by the way?
I'm fine. It's just, you know, I got hit in the nose earlier this year. It's frightening.
Especially when you're focused. Suddenly a raccoon comes out of nowhere. Airbus is showing off a new flying autonomous vehicle design at the Geneva Auto Show. It's a modular design that transforms based on the needs of passengers who are hailing a ride with the app, if it ever happens to see the time of day, because, I don't know, this is pretty future thinking. Basically, it's a pod where the passengers would sit. That pod can either be attached to a quadcopter sort of attachment on top, so it kind of flies over, snaps to the top of the pod, and can fly it away. Or it can lower the pod onto a set of wheels, like a wheel module, and then that vehicle can then travel the rough and tumble city streets. Is this our future right here? Or is this like our children's children's future?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think it's our future.
No.
Maybe our children's future. Maybe. There was a creepy video that showed, like, it's the promotional video for Airbus. And it part of it was that it would detect your, it would do face recognition and detect your mood. And then, like, the ambiance in the car would be based on what your face was doing. So Burke has an opinion, a very strong opinion.
Very strong. Yes. There we go.
Or maybe that's Freddy the Raccoon.
It could be Freddy the Raccoon.
Or maybe that's what I said inside my head when it came flying at my face.
I think it's cool. It's called the pop-up system.
It's cool, but it's, you know.
We'll ever see it.
No. No. We won't.
Although they envision also that it might pair with the Hyperloop system, something else that we may never see. So, you know, there's a lot of future going on here.
There's a lot of future in our face, all up in our face. Here, you're about
flying
to see
into our face.
How it detects our mood.
Oh, yeah. So if you're happy, what happens in these?
70% joy, 30% suggested ambiance.
Oh, this is getting a little too close to that Black Mirror episode, though.
Yep, mm-hmm. Because
it's been a while since we talked about Black Mirror.
I know, it has.
Oh, see, that's neat.
It's
kind of looks like a toy, though.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's cool. I think it's cool.
Yeah,
we'll see if
it
ever happens.
I do too. I don't think it's not cool. I just, show me the real thing.
Show me the future, man. Just make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, midnight UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us, tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW and find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
If you subscribe to TNT, then we will automatically know your mood and we can create the ambiance of the show according to that. And you can find all the ways to subscribe at twit.tv/TNT. We are spying through, listening to you through your television, hacking your iPhones. We know everything about you. And that's how we make the show exactly what you want it to be. We're using all of our spying for good.
Doing any of that.
You might not be.
Okay, well, that's true.
If you want to see us in person, please do. Come to see us, sit in the chair, email tickets at twit.tv. They're free. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney.
And I'm at Jason Howell. Thanks to our technical director, although I'm not sure if Megan wants to thank Brian. But maybe not. This might be, not a good day for
you,
Brian.
Sorry, Megan. Apologies. But now you and Kevin have something in common.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry.
The raccoon's just meant to sit there, not fly through the air. Thanks to Burke for babysitting the raccoon. Thanks to Kevin for editing the show today. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.